could listen to that music all day. The great Tito Puente leading off his all-percussion treat titled Monti. The Hmong part of the title refers to Mongo Santa Maria, who is the counterfoil for Tito Puente's timbales. This is from Tito's 1957 album, Top Percussion. I like playing older music because, just to prove the point, that when you do a thing really well, it withstands the test of time. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. We have so much to talk about, but that's up to you. This is your forum. It's an open forum. We invite as wide a participation as possible, people not depending on what other people are thinking to have an opinion, but offering an opinion of their own. We are hoping, of course, that we connect with each other, which is the whole point of having a forum, that you're connecting with people. And we are creating our own community. That is important to me, and I hope it is important to you as well, to have a place of our own where we don't have to toe the line. We don't have to have a preformed opinion. We don't have to agree at all. But we can introduce ideas in the safety of our respectful forum, in which ideas are important, and we recognize that people are bringing the best of their ideas for our consideration. 888-874-4888 is the number to call, and let's get started. Let's move along briskly today. Marie from Baltimore, you're starting us off today.
Oh, thank you for taking my call, and I want to thank you so much for starting off this past Monday about the fact that we might have gotten into a war. I'm going to make this brief. Some people may not like it, but I'm going to say it anyway. The three devils of death are the United States, France, and Great Britain. They are accomplices of death. They support Israel. They bomb Libya and other places around the world. I don't know why Americans are so, passive and don't research their people who want to get into high positions. That's all I have to say, and you have a good show.
Thank you very much, Marie. And thank you for raising the question about who else is in the circle of death, as you call it, the accomplices in this mission that we witnessed in this past couple of weeks. We have to start raising these questions and be aware of that. Clara from Philadelphia, you are on the air.
Hello, Eutrice, and hello. Eutrice's audience. I want to say I'm so glad to talk with you. I appreciated so much your talk yesterday. I was taken by your extreme concern and wanting to help people to realize what's going on. Eutrice, I think people are asleep for a lot of reasons, for different kinds of reasons. And in this country, it's as if the war situation is not a big issue because people are still fairly comfortable compared to people in other parts of the world. And I think there's a sense that in many people's minds, especially the majority, that we are untouchable. Of course, those of us in the Black community and other communities of color, and also people who generally, the white people who are poor, realize that's not true. But there's no coming together of these people. I'm saying that I think that's beyond repair. And I think that what we can do is take very good care of ourselves, our families, and our friends, and stop supporting. I've said this so many times. You don't support your enemy. the United States government and along with the corporate people have declared war first on the black community, then other people of color, now the middle class, as shown by one insertion at least in the current tax bill, where if you borrow money on your home, a home equity loan or a second mortgage, and you use it for things like buying a car for cash, paying off student loan, and there's another one, paying off your credit cards and maybe another one, you can't use the interest that you pay on that money. You can't use it to deduct from your taxes. The corporate people and other banking people went to the government and insisted that that be inserted in the tax bill. I don't know how many people know that. That's a weapon, a lethal weapon against many middle-class families. And I'm saying that's just an example. So I think we're just going to go, and I think Trump has done one major thing of note, and I think it is he's shown the whole world what kind of people the American people are. And I think we're not going to win. We're going into collapse. We need to really prepare for it. Mm-hmm. Because there are many things that are going on that are positive. People who are preparing.
Growing well, I say food, amen to the preparation part. As you know, we've been talking here for at least 2 years about the need to get ready for what's coming, because it is coming. We can't mm-hmm. avoid it. So your point is very well taken there. Thank you so much, Clara, for calling in today and contributing. We go to David. Hello, David.
Good afternoon, Eutrice. I have a number of things that are coming to mind for me. I believe that the mass of people that live in the United States are going through a Stockholm syndrome. And I say that.
Explain
that. That's right. The Stockholm syndrome. We have mass Stockholm syndrome among the masses of people that live in this country. And I say that because here we have the masses of people letting the small elite, that oligarch and plutocratic class, control everything. People, to me, are not in their right minds if they are in a situation like here in the United States, where everything is controlled by that group, their enemy. And the enemy is the enemy at the top, who control the legislative branch at all levels. They control the executive, and they control the courts. And everything that's done, for example, in the legislative branch, is in favor of those people in that ruling elite that runs the country. And we don't have any real political parties, because when you look at the Democrats and Republicans, who have pretty well closed out everybody else who had the idea of having some other party, you have a one-party system. It's no different than a football team that has an offensive team, part of the team, and a defensive part of the team. So even though one group is defense and one is offense, they're the same team. And that same team is what I'm talking about when I talk about Democrat and Republican. So that is the situation we have here, where the people are in a Stockholm syndrome state, where they support the very people who do not have their own interests at part. There's no way in this country that we could have nearly half the people being poor and go along with an economic system that doesn't work. If the economic system worked, then there wouldn't be any poor people here. If you'd have a better social system, and you know, you would have a system that benefited the people that live here. So this is, to me, is no different than the Stockholm syndrome, where you have those who are being oppressed join forces with those people who are oppressing them. So that's the way I think about this. And it's very difficult. If there's going to be any change, the ruling class is smart enough. They are very smart, and they know what bones to throw out, and they throw out enough bones to quiet the masses down. And when it comes to taking those bones back, they know what the timing is, and they take the bones back. And that's what they've been doing since Franklin Delano Roosevelt's time in the Great Depression. So they give out something, and they take it back. So the only answer to this is a different system. And people have to recognize that. And a system that benefits the masses of people in the country and throughout the world. There's no business that the poor people here have to go about, send their children to go about the world to keep up imperialism, to invade any country it feels like, do anything it wants to feel like doing, kill anybody, kidnap anybody they want to kidnap. And this is not in the interest of the masses of people that live here. But that's what's going on right away. Also, I want to say something about the military. The military, the reason that the ruling class got rid of the draft. See, by getting rid of the draft and filling the military with the people at the bottom, whereas the ruling class people and the people in the class of the professional class, their children don't have to go to the service, so there won't be any problems with dealing with them. So you just make it a so-called, quote-unquote, volunteer army, a sort of poverty draft. And you can use these little people at the bottom all over the world in your imperialist wars. There's no reason that some poor person has to go over to Iraq and kill people or be killed or Afghanistan or anywhere else. But as long as the people at the top don't have to send their children, it's all right. If we had a draft and their children had to go also, there would be a big difference, and they'd have to stop doing these things. So the ruling class are smart. They say, oh, well, we'll just get rid of the draft, and we'll get rid of that problem like we had during the Vietnam War. So, you know, that's what I have in mind. And the only way that's going to be changed when you don't have this corrupt system going. People have to get in their head. There are all these politicians, most of them are crooks. They're in the pockets of the ruling class. Most of the people that get appointed as judges are in harmony with the ruling class. And the executive has to do what the ruling class wants, not what's good for the people. This is Stockholm syndrome, if I think incorrectly on this. I believe definitely that most people are suffering from the Stockholm syndrome.
Okay. Well, we'll see how people react to that. It is a very interesting analysis. I can't say that I find anything wrong with it. It is very much an eye-opener, and let's see how people react. Good to hear from you today. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much.
Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hi, you, Trees. How you doing?
Okay. How are you doing, Harvey?
Very good. Well, I'd like to continue on with the theme here. I'd like to share some thoughts about preparing for the future by thinking about a national basic income program. And if you check out YouTube, the videos on robots and artificial intelligence as I do, you'd be shocked how advanced these technologies are and are coming along. And robots will take over many of the blue-collar jobs. We have autonomous vehicles coming up, so that would be bus drivers, truck drivers, factory workers, checkout jobs, grocery stores. One robot can easily replace three people. And in artificial intelligence, they also decimate the white-collar jobs, office workers, accountants, lawyers, even doctors. And if you're out of money, you're out of a job, you're out of money, this will lead to more crime in the streets, prostitution, drug addiction, alcoholism, child abuse, and this could lead to a very hellish social environment. Or America could experience a new renaissance if we tax the robots and learn to build our own day instead of a 9-to-5 workday structure that we're conditioned to do. People could get back into gardening, return to education, make it a lifelong educational experience, the arts. It's just endless of where we can go instead of doing boring jobs. It turns out a lot of jobs are very boring, repetitive, and we're above that. There may be some kid who's stuck in some hamburger flipping job, whereas if he went to school, he might be a math genius or find a cure for disease. I think this could actually be a good thing for us. But who would be against it? Well, I think the legal system would be against it. There'd be less crime if we all received a guaranteed national income. There'd be lot less crime, and therefore it'd be less need for prisons, lawyers, court systems, and prisons for profit. The military would be against it because people would think twice about joining the military, especially if they're poor. They can have other options, such as going to college and becoming more than just a murderous type soldier who's ready to kill for the state. And if people don't have money to purchase the products and services produced by robots and artificial intelligence, then actually it would hurt capitalism itself, because capitalism relies on people having money. But if vast amounts, millions of people are put out of work and don't have a source of money, income, to buy the products produced by the robots, then capitalism would be in danger of going down. So I think a national guaranteed income would actually save capitalism itself from ruination.
But do you want to save capitalism?
Well, that's debatable. everything is a two-sided coin. There's parts of it that are wonderful and parts of it that are hell. So it's the system by which the world runs at this time. Even the communist systems all run on money. And until we find a better way, that seems to be the way it's going. But if people en masse don't have any money anymore because robots and artificial intelligence can do the job cheaper, better, we'd have to deal with all those people, and there'd be starvation, there'd be a lot of problems. So until we find a better way to deal with a better way to trade things or a system, a financial system, I think we're stuck with capitalism. And if we don't think of moving to a national basic income program where everybody is provided with with money to pay the rent, to buy the food, then we're going to be in hell, I think.
Do you see a possibility that with all of this artificial intelligence and robotics, that in fact we might experience a mass replacement of human labor, but we'll be charged for it just the same? They will argue that, well, robots may not be human, but they have to be serviced, their parts are going to go wacky after a while, they'll have to be replaced, and there's a cost to maintaining a robot akin to the cost of human labor. I haven't seen much of a discussion on that.
Yes, but I feel that when that comes, that they'll use robots to refurbish robots. In other words, they'll be very, very complex, and so it'll once again, the money will go toward the robots that can service a robot faster than a human can. It's all about, you know, like capitalism's all about doing the job as fast as possible, as cheap as possible, and as good as possible. And I don't think that we could keep up with this type of technology. What was happening in, there's a company that was making iPhones for Apple in China. And what happened was that people were jumping off of buildings because they couldn't keep up with the rate of production. And so the company said that it was going to get 1 million robots to replace the people. People were completely overwhelmed by the level of production. So this is the way it's going, especially as the world gains in population, as we move from 7 to 9 billion people. We're going to need more and more production, and people will not be able to keep up with it. So it'll be the robots that'll take the job, do it cheaper, work 24 hours a day. They don't require any unions. They don't ask for vacation. We can't compete with them. So I think that the only way to go is to look at a national basic income program so that we are freed up to do things that maybe would be better for us in terms of educating ourselves, in terms of returning to the arts, music. I think that this could be a boon to mankind, but it could also be it could actually create war if you have all these so many people not working, and it would be a boon to the prisons for profit. So it's that we're kind of at a bifurcation in terms of labor and the way we see ourselves, and I think that we have to take a look now so that we don't get caught in dire circumstance later.
Well, you always bring something to us to make sure that our brain cells can, you know, try and wrap around it. Really great ideas. And thank you for this idea and your subject today. Thanks, Harvey, for calling in. Clara from Philadelphia, did we talk with you yet? Hello, Clara, you're on the air. Okay, so we move along to Randolph from Montreal. You're on the air.
Hello, Utrice. I just, maybe it's not relevant, but what makes me very sad is watching the demonstrations by people in France. What is really sad is watching them being beaten merely and gassed merely for actually petitioning their government for redress of injustices in government policies. It's sad because people really shouldn't be beaten by their servants because the governments decide that they want to fire, lay off hundreds of thousands of people. I mean, every person that's fired, it affects five other people's livelihoods. We're all interdependent on each other in the community and in the nation. And it's sad that people hire their politicians. People act as if politicians are in a higher class than they are. But the politicians are really their employees. And these politicians are only there to express what people want done in their nation. But things seem to be turned upside down. But it's sad that this violence is not acceptable. Many countries don't have this kind of violence because they do what the people want them to do. Let them have what they want. And that way, you have a peaceable society, a society of peace and sort of more well-being amongst people, and then the best of their talents will be realized. So, what do you think?
Well, you're very, very optimistic. When would you say that France or any other major country has actually made it a point that the purpose of government was to see to the needs of people first? Where would you say that existed, and at what point in history?
It exists after a war, because the government is at the mercy of the people. And those times, for a few years, employment is plentiful, wages are reasonable, and people can see a future for their families. But unfortunately,
but it is also, you're correct, we tend to see this attitude on the part of government after wars. Why? Because the government has to show some kind of a recognition of a duty to pay back. This is just, you know, the propaganda. You've paid into a system by dying and allowing us to use your sons and allowing us to do at the international level things that we shouldn't be doing at all. Except, of course, there are some times when war, I believe, just cannot be avoided. But you have a lot of wars starting out not as a moral issue, if you will, but as a money issue, a power issue, an issue of dominance over the world. And that's how most wars have started. The issue of dominance over the world. So when they snatch up people's sons and daughters, and when they put into service a massive military machine that diverts money away from what we would consider the proper or the more beneficial way to spend money, which is to invest in education, you invest in infrastructure, you invest in employment, you invest in areas where the benefit goes to the people first, not to the oligarchs, not to the power elites, but you make an appropriate investment. But many governments are not in sync with their people, and therefore in times of war, or they create situations of an impending war to frighten people into, you know, once again, this, the enemy is going to attack us. What will you do to help your country? And out of the window goes the real conversation that needs to be had, which is, what has been your role in improving the lot of the people? We in the United States are at that point right now. Lots and lots of money flinging around the world and being diverted into different sectors here in the United States, having nothing to do with lifting the options for people in the United States to better themselves and to contribute to a better country. The idea of a government having that purpose, when would you say was the last time? You said, you know, after the war, because the government still needed the people to rebuild a country that they absolutely, I mean, they slashed through the budgets. They misappropriated the assets and resources in the name of war. They have to come back to the people to ask them to suffer again as they rebuild and portray that as a part of a patriotic duty and not as a part of, well, we messed up or we really, really lied to you and we have to make it up to you. They're not going to do that.
Well, there's light, I think, at the end of the tunnel. It seems to me that the president is trying to use peaceful purposes to avoid war. But I don't want to say that's the truth, because every time I think it's going to happen, the opposite happens. But I think your programs and the people that call in are making a difference in the world, because those people, our servants, are listening. They are listening. And if more people start to question how their employees are acting, the employees will start shaping up.
We can only hope. We can only hope that that's the case. But in the meantime, we have enough of an established historical record to advise us that we shouldn't trust that that would happen, and that we should seek other ways of arriving at a point of justice in the world. You know, we've given up so much in the name of justice and freedom, and in the end, it was all a ruse. For most of the time, it was a ruse, simply to protect the interests of the power elites. And we ourselves have missed the point that, as important as we are, even though people think we're just, quote, little people, but we are very important in the continuity of nations. And it's time that we understand that that itself constitutes power and the power to influence change.
Say that, wait, teachers. Say that again, please. What are you trying to say? What are you telling me? What you do,
I'm saying that people have been reluctant to realize that although we are viewed as the little people, the cogs in the wheel, we really have a great deal of power. We will not exercise it for some reason. We feel uncomfortable about the idea of telling the governing bodies that they're wrong.
Exactly.
And we have to get used to the idea that it is up to us to exercise vigilance, because for the most part, and this is what history shows, for the most part, people, when they act as a mass, they want good things for the country.
Exactly.
So why not trust that power and build on it and, you know, level the playing field a little bit? It's not about them governing us. Governance is about the both sides asserting and affirming the power that they have. But we've always left it to some authority, some power structure to make all the decisions that in turn affect us. And we have to change that. We have to change that point of view.
Right.
Thank you so much for calling in today. I really appreciate it. Thank you. Noel from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, Utrice. You and I go way back when you were at WBAI, when you had that party on New York Avenue a long time ago. Remember that?
Is this Noel Leader?
No, this is Noel.
Oh, yeah, but is it Noel Leader?
No, not Noel Leader. No,
Noel.
Just Noel. But that's how far. And I actually saw you at when you were in New York recently. Anyway, Speaking of New York, great segue, right? I want to speak about this corrupt governor we have here who I'd like to ask you a question, Utrice. Why is it like members of NAN and for those around the country, the National Action Network of Al Sharpton, they allow people like that to come in there and not ask them pertinent questions? For example, Cuomo recently here in New York State was talking about, we are Israel and Israel is us. No one ever asked me that question, Utrice. I was doing some research before I called you. We give a total of $40.1 billion with a B to Israel every year. Just imagine if 10 billion of that could be used in throughout New York State and New York City. Now, I never requested that give that much to Israel, you know. He renamed the Tappan Zee Bridge. You know the Tappan Zee Bridge, Utrice.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. You know, it was rebuilt again because the original one from the 1950s fell apart. And he renamed it after his father, Mario Cuomo. Now, I don't know if you know this, but the Tappans were the original Indians that lived in that area at the time. So, of course, that the white supremacy supersedes what the people who actually live there. And it's also for those of you who live outside of the area, or actually those who live around the country, Chris Cuomo of CNN is a brother of Mario Cuomo. And lastly, the NYCHA housing. NYCHA is New York City Housing Authority.
The Sun.
I'm sorry. Correct. The New York City Housing Authority here in the New York City five borough area. Andrew Cuomo was governor for almost 8 years now or so, and he's finally showing up to a poor Latino. Oh, we're so concerned. All of a sudden, why? Do these people allow, it's almost like allowing Hillary Clinton in to kiss babies during her presentation. Why does this allow it, Utrice? I would like you to answer
because
that question.
Because people allow it.
Why?
It is allowed because people allow it. These are the same people who are very upset today, ignored multiple insults to their community over the years, over the decades.
Mm-hmm.
When I was saying that Mario Cuomo's tenure in office was one of the most racist administrations we had ever seen, people kept attacking me. How could I say something like that? Well, because it's true.
Mm-hmm.
And blacks refuse to deliver themselves out of the house of bondage, political bondage, refuse to do it. And by giving this approbation and approval to essentially rotten, racist systems. They get exactly what they deserve.
Mm-hmm. Because we all know they're not, none of them Hillary's or the Cuomo, they'll ever show back in our communities again.
Oh,
I
yes,
mean,
they
do they understand
now
that
they will have the proxies do the job.
Mm-hmm.
The proxies will be like this weekend, this very weekend as we speak, the National Action Network has a major convention going on in New York City with all these
Correct.
Luminaries appearing before it, which is just another way of confirming that Al Sharpton is the point man. He's the leader of the blacks.
Right.
And so if anybody has a they're not introducing new leadership. They're not introducing new leadership ideas.
Mm-hmm.
They are perfectly in line with a system that has a long and disgusting history of exploiting the black and Latino communities. And they go along with it because it pays.
Yeah, and you let's look at something else we didn't even discuss. How come they couldn't hold it at a black hotel?
Well, you know, it's a way of showing progress.
Oh, I see.
Yes, you have progressed. You can't meet in Bedford-Stuyvesant.
Right. Well, like, remember what Malcolm said, putting a knife in my back and pulling it halfway out. That's progress. You're absolutely right, Eudrice. I understand progress now.
It is up to communities. I keep saying it all comes down to communities and individual action that would say, this is unacceptable.
Yes.
And, I mean, I'm not trying to interfere with your right to organize your fancy-schmancy organization. Great.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. But you've been wrong on this, that, and the next.
Yes,
and
ma'am.
We are not going along with you on these things. Now, here's a dilemma for many black and Latino people in the city of New York and beyond it. The thing that is the dilemma is, in many ways, these organizations with a spotty record and with spotty people in it are all we've got.
Mm.
This is the problem. This is what we've got. So they have situated themselves as the go-to people. You can't avoid them. They're like VD. They're just not going away.
Right. Oh, there was a note just handed to me here, Eutrice, that you and I were just, Nan wants us to come to that meeting.
Absolutely.
Should I accept for you and I?
No, not for me.
Just kidding. Have a good afternoon and a great weekend, Eutrice. Thank you.
Thank you, Noel. Thanks so much. By the way, you sound a lot like Noel Leader. I should let you know that. Bill from New Jersey, you're on the air. I'm having a great time today. I hope you are just listening to the thoughts that people are putting forward for our consideration. And this is, to me, the greatest purpose of radio and how we build our communities. We don't have to agree, but we have to make an effort to understand where we are, what is informing our thinking, because what informs our thinking invariably informs our action. Bill, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice.
Good afternoon, sir. How are you doing?
Good. I want to chime in, as per usual. There's an old saying that there's nothing new under the sun, and I think that it is an appropriate saying, because the response to Donald Trump, his actions and his presidency, it makes me think of that saying, because I see absolutely nothing here, nothing new. This is how America and how America's presidents have conducted their office for as long as I can remember. I don't know when the last time a president went before Congress and asked, could he bomb someone? I know Obama didn't do it, and he bombed seven countries. And even if they did go in.
And with regard to Syria itself, Obama did observe the War Powers Act, and he did come before Congress.
For the boots on the ground thing, for bombing, he bombed seven countries without asking for any permission for that. There was no going in front of Congress to bomb. I remember I did the math once. During his 8 years, he dropped an average of 20 bombs a day for 8 years on seven different countries, not to mention his Tuesday drone kill list meeting. So dropping bombs on brown people is the American way. You're going to have a problem if you drop bombs on white people. We haven't done that in 80 years. But dropping bombs on brown people is the American way, and you'll never, if you're president of this country, you'll never have a problem if all you do is bomb brown people. Never have a problem. It's the way we do it. And as far as his other actions, a lot of what people say is wrong with Trump is he's filled his cabinet with incompetence and Nikki Haley is a terrible person. Well, Barack Obama filled his cabinet with nothing but Wall Street, and he put Hillary Clinton in. I mean, is Nikki Haley worse than Hillary Clinton? I don't think so.
Not even close.
Not even close. She's bad, but she's not Hillary Clinton. I don't see really where Trump is any different than Obama, other than Trump doesn't smile and kiss you before he rapes you, like Barack Obama did. He doesn't smile on your face and give you a nice kiss on your cheek before
and
he rapes you.
I'd ask you about it, which is, we can't deny the fact that this administration, perhaps it's just the way it's turning out, is so in your face.
Yes.
It's so in your face with corruption. And,
as far as I'm concerned, that's really the only difference, is the in-your-face. And I think that's really what the Republican Party had a problem with Donald Trump. Their problem was, look, you're outing us. You know, we've been making our way, you know, quietly behind the scenes screwing them over. You're outing us, and maybe you can get away with it because you're famous, but none of the rest of us are going to be able to get away with this, and this is really going to hurt our chances of getting elected and keeping jobs. That's the in-the-face is the problem they have with Donald Trump. And that's really what's got people upset. You know, Barack Obama did all the same kind of stuff, but he's nice, and he says nice things, and he speaks well, and he's presidential, but his policies weren't any better. His actions weren't any better. I remember the first action I remember he took when he took office is they had a situation, which I think, you know, odd timing, with so-called Somalian pirates, which for those in the audience that don't know, basically these are teenagers, starving teenagers, because we destroyed their fish by dumping various wastes in their ocean, nuclear waste no less, various countries did. So they're starving people. They go out into the ocean, and passing ships, they ask for basically a toll. Give us something, and they happened to get on a U.S. ship, and they wanted to leave. They said, oh, you know, U.S. ship, we want to leave. They said, no, you can't leave. And they asked Barack Obama what to do, and he two separate times gave the order to execute them. He gave the order once, just shoot them. Then they say, oh, wait, we don't have the shot. And then he gave the order a second time, shoot them all, but keep one alive, which they then brought back to the U.S. to stand trial for piracy, which hadn't happened in 200 years. And I believe that was the power structure saying, look, we want to show you that Barack Obama is not an African. He's not going to be nice to Africans. Don't worry. He's with us.
But there's another part to that story, and that is the laws of the sea are also part of what countries, major countries, see as their authority to regulate, because it has to do with global power. When they did these things, and people really need to think about stuff before they do them, that was piracy. It was extortion on the high seas. And they were reintroducing the idea of, let's just hold these major ship lines. We have the power because we have guns, and we can, you know, put them to their heads and get the money we want. It's a form of terrorism, really. And they didn't think about these things before they started out, and they should have thought about them.
Well, their mistake was going on a U.S. ship. The various other countries, including Russia, said that they just gave them something, and off they went. This was going on for a long time.
Yeah, but that's not the point. The point is like saying, the point is addressing the action, which would only get worse. Because
and you don't
they
think
were,
the timing
in fact,
was,
holding
was a little...
ships hostage and ransom. They were, you know, holding their goods ransom. They were doing all kinds of crazy things, which included, in some cases, shooting and killing people. So they were getting to be, you know, a bit out of hand, and nobody seemed to be able to reach them, to talk, you know, reasonably to them, and to have them reconsider
their actions. The timing was interesting. You don't find the timing interesting that the so-called first black president with African parentage is called upon to shoot these Africans very shortly after he takes office. You don't find that the timing of that interesting at all?
Yes or no. Number one, he couldn't prevent the time that he was elected. He got elected when he got elected. What it shows up more than anything else is the distance, the cultural and political distance between Barack Obama and the African world. That's what that shows. Barack Obama did not convene African leaders. I believe it was meant to show that. That was the message.
The message was to show that. That's what I'm saying. This was, I believe, I took advertising in school, and the first thing that we were taught was when you look at an ad, a print ad, TV ad, every single thing in that ad is placed there for a reason. And it got me to look at things differently in my life. They said the ice cubes are a certain way, and the walls of the room are a certain color. Everything is there for a reason. And when I look at things, I always look at them that way. Everything is there for a reason. You have to look at every piece of it to really get the meaning.
Barack Obama made sure this was the first thing that he did as an international figure.
Yes.
He made sure to deracinate himself, and that is in order to make himself acceptable in the broader global white community. But at the same time, he was dealing with a very real issue, and what pointed it up, what was pointed up more than anything else, was the cultural and political distance that this African president had with Africa. You may recall when he did go to Africa, he upset the leaders by pointing, wagging a finger of blame at them and talking, he's a little whippersnapper according to African tradition. He's a young guy. Mind your manners.
He also did it here with black men here, where he gave a speech where he said, "You black men are the problem. You guys got to get your act together. You're the problem." He did that.
If Donald Trump did that, on a global level, and this was an issue that was international, he reacted predictably. And we had no effective intervention from the African world on this matter. So it left him very few options except to show the dominance of U.S. military power, because they literally walked into that trap by refusing the African leaders, by refusing to see this as an international issue that they themselves could have resolved if they had had any kind of a structure where they could get together and solve these things. But they didn't. They let it go on, and so they put Obama in a very rough place. And it is, in fact, it's on the high seas. They didn't understand the game that they were playing. Well, they overplayed their hand here very seriously. You know, ragtag group, you don't have the weapons. Why are you doing these? Well, that is the exciting end of our program. I want to thank you for joining us today and sharing your ideas. And we will be back with each other hopefully on Wednesday. Have a great weekend. Bye-bye.